It's the most important day on the WCHL broadcast calendar. This is the 2013 Chapel Hill Carborough Orange County Forum on 97.9 FM WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station, and streaming live on chapelboro.com. 10 consecutive hours live from WCHL studios with more than 60 people from the local community discussing and debating local issues. Our forum is brought to you by the UPS stores, Fordham Boulevard and Menomont, AutoLogic, Carolina Inn, Harrington Bank, Durham Tech, University Mall, Molly Maid, and the Happy Tooth. Now, Forum Hour 6. The subject, K-12 education. Our moderator is D.G. Martin.
Welcome to Hour 6 of the 2013 WCHL Community Forum. Well, as those of you who have been listening know, the forum offers 10 topics and 10 hours featuring commentary and discussion among town and university officials and other representatives of our community. They're all focused on the important issues affecting our county. In this hour, we're going to talk about education and everything it means to our youth and our community, and we got some great guests. First of all, we have Tom Forsella, who's the superintendent of the Chapel Hill Carborough School System, Patrick Rhodes, the Orange County School Superintendent, Laverne Maddox is a principal at Carborough High School, Shell Brownstein is the board chair of the Chapel Hill Carborough School System. And we're also pleased to have a community leader, a parent of a Glenwood Elementary student, Casey Saucy. All of you all, welcome. We're excited about the chance to talk about probably the issue that concerns more people in Chapel Hill than any other. And I thought that maybe we could kick it off by asking each of you, starting with you, Tom Forsella, what's at the top of your list on education issues that you're thinking about that maybe we haven't thought about enough?
Well, I think I'd like to mention a couple of things. One is we're in a time of change in public education, and probably the biggest challenge is navigating the requirements and the mandates that come to us from the state and or the federal government, and then trying to implement the kind of change locally that we think is appropriate. And that's a challenge, because we all know that we can get better, but we have so many people to answer to. And in our school system, our other biggest issue that's a real challenge is what can we do to fix our aging facilities. We have buildings that are either very new or very old, and that's going to be something that's going to challenge us for several years.
Well, we'll talk about some of those things a bit during the hour. And Patrick Rhodes, has he spoken words that affect you as superintendent of the Orange County Schools as well?
Certainly some of Tom's points are concerns for me, and I think for our school board, and probably for the entire state of North Carolina. A major concern is the gradual and progressive lowering of appropriations from the legislature that are squeezing school systems across the state on all fronts. It's sad to think that now a teacher with a bachelor's degree in North Carolina has to work 15 years before they reach a $40,000 threshold, and that North Carolina ranks about 47th now behind many states, most southern states, including our border states, in per pupil funding. And that has slidden gradually, has been on a downslide for the last several years, and that creates problems all across the board, eventually impacting the students in the classrooms.
Well, Shel Brownstein, what about from the standpoint of a board member or a board chair of the Chapel Hill Carborough Schools? What's on your mind?
Well, I think the issues that both the superintendents have raised are critical ones that both boards are wrestling with. Trying to preserve the integrity of public school education in today's budget climate is quite significant and an issue we're all grappling with. We also at the same time are facing continual pressure to try to make sure that we close all of our achievement gaps, we address the needs of all of our students, and also are really pushing to the next level, trying to make sure that we're raising students that will ultimately be able to compete in the job market that they're all going to face and have jobs that are durable, that can weather, you know, economic issues like we've been facing here now. It's a lot on the plates of the superintendents and the teachers and the principals. I admire them all for their dedication and hard work with this, and we're just trying to do, you know, all that we can to provide them with what they need to do their jobs and do them well.
Well, you just expressed your appreciation to the person I'm going to call on next, and that's Laverne Maddox, who's the principal at Carborough High School. And you have a whole set of problems or challenges and opportunities and great things going on. What's at the top of the list today?
So to narrow down my first choice, I would have to agree with both superintendents and our board chair in saying that the demands just on a daily basis, the structure of our schools are such that differing bodies make decisions that impact those of us who are in the school. And the budget concerns are, of course, very paramount to our decision making at the school level. The good thing about having such professionals as we have in Carborough and in Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools, we will make things happen for students with the resources that we have, but just meeting the daily demands, new testing systems, and several accountability models puts demands on the teachers. And I think the main concern is finding a way to maintain our high level of expectation and quality teaching and showing appreciation for that and maintaining those people in the profession, because we have highly skilled educators and we want to make sure they stay with us.
Well, thank you. Well, where the rubber meets the road is with the kids in school, and we don't have any students here today, but Casey Saucy is a parent of a Glenwood Elementary student. Now, you've heard all of those folks who are involved intimately talking about the absence of resources, but still the schools are doing a pretty good job, aren't they, with their kids? What are you worried about?
Well, I wouldn't say that I worry about it, but I would say that I have the same goals as many other parents in our community. To give you a perspective, I have two daughters, elementary school-age daughters that are at Glenwood Elementary, one of whom is in the Mandarin Dual Language Program. And I think, like most parents in our district, our goal is that our children grow up to be happy, well-educated, well-adjusted adults. And we believe that to be that way, they need to be globally aware as they are and prepared for secondary education and ready for our increasingly smaller world. And that's the world that they're going to face when they get out of school and that they'll need to find jobs in. We do believe that by living here and raising our children here and sending them to the Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools, that our kids have a great chance of achieving those goals. I have a deep appreciation and respect, having now been in the system for 4 years and being at Glenwood for lots of wonderful reasons and the challenges that we've had there as well. I really respect our educational leaders for creating a system that really values and educates to this worldview that many of us really believe is the world our children are going to inherit.
Well, thank you so much, Casey. One of the things we have talked about resources, and we'll come back to your challenges and how you're facing them. But you've not had, you've also met some other challenges in both systems during the year, like reassignment. And looking back, Tom Fasol, and I'm going to ask Shell about this as well, what did you learn from reassignment, and how does it look looking back?
Well, what I learned is, I guess, that it's the right thing to do. That as the leader, as the leader of the school, you have to make sure you have the right people in the right places. And it's very unusual that a reassignment's challenged. In other places in the country, this would just be so far from the norm that you work for a school system, and that doesn't entitle you to choose where you're going to work within that system, like any organization. And decisions often need to be made, and it won't be the last one. Where do people fit?
I hate to interrupt you, but you're talking about teacher reassignment, mm-hmm. and I'm talking about, I'm glad you reminded me, that'll be something fun to talk about, but I'm really talking about the student reassignment plan and the shifting that has to go along when there's a new school in operation, or when there is a change
when it's a new
in,
school.
In mission of a school.
Yeah, and Shell's been through this also, to some extent, Carborough High School. Again, when you have a new school, you have a new school because you're overcrowded, and you have to fill that school, and people have to come to somewhere. Now, on the positive side, everyone likes the school that they're in, but we still have to fill the new school because we had several schools this year at the elementary level that were significantly overcrowded. We had to bring in extra teacher assistants to help out with some of those classrooms that were getting up to 31, 32 kids in a class. But with the opening of a new school, a lot of that, at least for a while, goes away. So it's a tough decision. People don't want to leave their home school, and it's a no-win for the school board, and it's a tough decision for them.
Yeah, well, Shell Ransom, she's got a hard-fixed smile on her face. Was this during the time of the reassignment, and your phone was ringing off the hook all the time with complaining parents? Did you wish that you had maybe found another way to serve the public?
No, actually, I've really enjoyed being on the board. So you sign up for a lot that you don't realize, but as you go through it, you know, I have great respect for my peers on the board as well. We work well as a team. We have different perspectives, and the breadth of that really, I think, strengthens us as a board. So with that level of professionalism going into it, I think it was very helpful that it wasn't an election year where there weren't people on the board that were brand new. You need some experience under your belt to face the very strong amount of input you're going to get during redistricting. And speaking to what Dr. Forsella said, everybody loves their schools, and we are very fortunate that way. No one wants to leave the school they're in, even when they're in a school that is so overcrowded that they know that their children are suffering from that when they have 30, 31 children in the classroom, when there are not enough spaces for the classroom teacher to be, even if we wanted, could decompress them, where they have to start their lunch at 9:30 or 10 in the morning because you can't cycle that many children through in a day. And that's to say nothing, the instruction that's going on, the amount of volume that the teachers are having to try to address. Safety concerns. The issues are very severe, but when it comes to then the only solution, the only reason we have this beautiful new school is because of that degree of overcrowding. We've had a really good relationship with the county commissioners, thankfully, and they've been able to provide the funding so we can get the schools. We were on a breaking point. It had to happen. I have been through redistricting before as a parent and also as a SIT chair. Each piece of that is very difficult. What I did learn, though, I think the process this year was a little different than it had been before, and I relied on the previous board, so we did a process where it was sort of taken out of the nuts and bolts in terms of the board was, and administration went through it. I think we needed to, we did all realize we learned some lessons, and we're going to regroup in the fall once school's started and we have a chance to process sort of what the reassignment ended up really looking like based on what's predicted. There'll be an opportunity for us to even improve the process more. Thankfully, we don't anticipate needing to do that in the near future. So
I want to ask specifically, is that it'll be 3 or 4 years or next year? When would you project the next?
The projections are based on projected enrollment.
Right.
And because with the opening of Northside Elementary, we've pushed back, and I want to say 15, 16, 17, something like that. It's at least 4 years from now. That will need another elementary school, and that may even change because some of the predicting the growth here in our community has been difficult in the recent recession. Things skyrocketed for many years. We've opened many new schools here, and things have slowed down a bit.
Well, population's growing in other parts of Orange County as well. Patrick Rhodes, did you learn anything from the Chapel Hill experience with reassignment, or did you feel like they handled it perfectly?
I think they handled a reassignment about as well as you can now. And the key factor here, the key operative thing, is parents are intensely loyal to the school that they belong to, and they don't want to move. And we have to be very cautious as we move ahead. You can see what reassignment configurations and efforts in Wake County have caused a lot of eroding of the confidence in the board there and community confidence in the school system that way because of constant moving and shifting. And it does need to take place in some cases. But we also, as public school people, have to be cautious and do it very well. And I think Chapel Hill certainly did very democratically. It's the best way that they could. Because parents now have choices, and they will exercise choices, whether they be homeschool, charter schools, parochial schools, private schools. online schools. And when they have this wealth of choices out there now, they may choose that option, and we have to be prepared for that.
Well, before we close, Laverne Maddox, we've already heard about how parents want to keep their kids in the same schools, and maybe when Carborough, it wasn't yesterday, but Carborough is still a relatively new high school, and now some of those people who might have been pushed towards Carborough, they wouldn't trade for anything, would they? You all have worked out a pretty good solution over there.
I think so. Carborough was the only high school involved in the redistricting and reassignment in Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools, and it was difficult. We currently are about still 50 to 75 students over capacity, but no one wants to leave. And so the administration and the redistricting committees worked very closely with Carborough High School and parent communities and listened.
Well, we're about time that we move into a break. You're listening to Hour 6 of the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carborough Community Forum. We're talking about education. We're going to take a quick commercial break. I'm D.G. Martin. Please don't go away. We'll be right back.
At the Happy Tooth, dentistry is more than a profession. It's a passion. Here's Dr. Larry Murray.
My dad was the town dentist in the town that we grew up. And I always enjoyed spending time in his office and watching how he interacted with patients. The Happy Tooth concept is one where we want the patients to feel welcome and part of the family. I try to extend myself to all of my patients and make myself available to them for whatever their needs are, be it orthodontics, general dentistry, or beyond.
For more information, visit happytoothcares.com.
Hi, this is Don Rice, owner of Molly Maid of Chapel Hill. The thought-provoking conversations taking place today on WCHL represent what this community is all about. The panelists are committed to making our community great, just like we are at Molly Maid. For 16 years, our family has been serving yours. My wife, Kathy, and I are proud to employ almost 50 people, doing our small part to keep our community vibrant and, of course, clean. As we support the WCHL Community Forum, we hope you'll support our locally owned business by visiting us at mollymaid.com.
When you think of Harrington Bank, do you think green? No, not that kind of green, sustainability green. At Harrington Bank, we're the first bank in the nation to earn Green Plus certification. And the Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber of Commerce has just selected us Sustainable Business of the Year. For Harrington Bank, going green is a smart business decision that strengthens our local economy, environment, and community. Stop by one of our three convenient locations in Chapel Hill. Harrington Bank, you deserve banking like this.
Hi, this is Michelle from the Carolina Inn. For 88 years, we've been serving our community with the finest hospitality and space for important community gatherings. Through the years, our commitment to serving Chapel Hill has never wavered, which is why we are proud to support the 2013 WCHL Community Forum. When John Sprunt Hill built the Carolina Inn in the 1920s, he and his contemporaries vigorously discussed the issues of the day, and I'm sure he would be proud to know that tradition continues today. The Carolina Inn, part of your community since 1924.
You're listening to the 2013 Chapel Hill Carborough Orange County Forum on WCHL and streaming live on chapelborough.com. Now, back to the forum.
Well, welcome back to Hour 6 of the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carborough Community Forum. We're here with several important educators, administrators, and parents talking about education in our community. Before we took the break, we were talking a little bit about the revision to the attendance lines. And Casey Saucy, we've heard from the principals and the administrators and the board chairs. What did you hear out in the community about this process in the Chapel Hill Carborough school system?
Wow, I don't think you've got enough time for me to answer all of that. There were sort of two schools of thought. There were the people that really didn't want to be redistricted for whatever reason. And then there were people that just believed in the district and think that any school, and being at Glenwood, you know, we were one of the overcrowded schools. So we knew that we were going to lose some of our families and some of our families that are really involved in the school. But I also know from hearing stories through the years that the new school often gets a lot of the great new shiny resources because it is new. And I remember touring Rashkus with my daughters before they started at Glenwood, and then going over to Glenwood and, you know, finding a big disparity in some of the resources there. But ultimately, I can talk to my belief. I think that so much of the education is the teachers and the administration on site at the schools and not the physical plant. I think that that's a bonus. And maybe that's because we don't have a fancy, shiny school. But I just think that we're really lucky to be here. I mean, I grew up here and went to Estes and Phillips. And I just think that all of our kids here in Chapel Hill Harbor are the lucky kids.
Yeah, well, I would agree. I love what you mentioned, and I want to ask Tom Frisella if that's part of the strategy is in the planning for the reassignment, that you you make sure that there's a little bit better school at the end of the road for those people who are asking to go to a new school.
Well, one of the advantages of building a new school is you're starting at a place that you want every other school to be. So even in terms of technology, you equip the school to where it needs to be. So you're not playing catch up. You're starting in a good place. But that is, and you know, Casey brought up a great issue with our older facilities, and I think Glenwood is our oldest. And we just had a big facilities study completed that really puts a focus on us and the onus on us to start addressing that, because we don't want the reason that people want to go to the new school or that teachers might want to go to that school is because it is the newest, because it is about the quality of the teachers and whether it's new or old. It shouldn't make a huge difference, but it's something we have to keep our eye on.
Well, how do you, if you'll tell us some of your secrets, how do you reward the people who are asked to make the change and try to smooth out the rough feelings that they may have about being the ones who have to make the sacrifice?
Well, I don't know if it's so much reward, but I think it's just communicating with the parents. Cheryl Carnahan, who's the principal of Northside, she and I have visited the communities and the community groups, and even have gone out and talked to the parents in their community gathering places about the new school, what it's going to be like, and why it'll give you the same kinds of things, and maybe in some cases a little bit more than what your school offers right now. The other advantage of a new school is it's an opportunity, and with Northside, for us, we saw Northside as an opportunity, and we're implementing some different kinds of teaching techniques. We're staffing it a little bit differently because now we're bringing in people to work in that school who really want to move that school in the direction that we want the entire district to go. But the advantage is you're brand new and you're starting brand new.
Cheryl Brainstein.
Just wanted to also round out, I think, part of the question that you're asking. Not every child and every family that was redistricted is going to the new school. So the redistricting happened across the entire district. And so there will be families that are moving to any one of the other elementary schools. And our administration has worked really hard with the teachers and the principals to work on that transition, that idea of letting the students go and tour the new school where there's great welcoming going on. They get a chance to be familiar with it. They realize that it's not an individual family moving, but the whole community that they're with, so all their neighbors are going. And just by seeing that and doing that, it helps alleviate some of the fears that students might have. And usually we would comment over and over again, really, the children end up making these transitions easier a lot of times. It's harder for us adults sometimes to envision how this is going to work. But there's been a tremendous effort on that transition. And then an added special effort on opening our other new school, which is the magnet program at FPG, where Dr. Frisella advocated for hiring an additional administrator to help with that transition time to really focus on getting ready. And so they're really opening up two new schools this year, and there's a lot of transition for a lot of different families. So there's intentionality trying to be put into that.
Well, talking about dealing with people who are upset about various decisions, has the storm of protest about the change of Frank Bordiger Graham now passed? And are you over that, you think?
I think most of the when before the decision was made, we received a tremendous amount of input, both by email and verbally at our meetings. and also even by snail mail, still being used. and yes, that has settled down some. There are different times when different issues come up, then we'll hear some more. I think as decisions are being made as we move forward and get more specific ready as far as who the administrators are going to be, what that school is going to look like, and then also now that reassignment is done, students know where they're going next, so you can make plans. It was very hard when everybody was in limbo. So as hard as it was to make those decisions, we had to do that so that people could plan for the future, and that helps. Once there's a plan, that helps.
I want to switch topics now, unless there are other comments from any of you about this situation. And we've talked about the diminishment of resources as a result of state government action and the problems that that's created for you, and is there at the top of your mind. You didn't mention some of the other decisions or proposed decisions before the legislature. Now, everything from adjusting the tenure situations to requiring cursive writing, proposals to readjust the relationship between the county commissions and the school boards, and other things that must be on your mind. Are you worried about any of these decisions, or are you just kind of laying back waiting to see what they ask you to do? Tom Frisella?
I think we're all pretty worried about the decisions.
What are you worried most?
Well, I think that everything that you said and then some, because we don't know. We're in a climate right now, and as Patrick alluded to, that we just don't know which of these bills are going to pass. Another one you didn't mention was merit pay. There's a big push for a merit pay system, which I think people need to be held accountable.
Well, Danielle, you mentioned merit pay. Would you oppose all of these things that we've talked
about?
No,
there are some things that are good if implemented in the appropriate way. I think, for instance, just to take the merit pay issue, there is value in people, and people should be held accountable, but there are different ways to do that. And I think the way the state often looks at these things is they pick something that's been done in another state and replicate it, and really not getting the kind of input that they might need. Tenure and some of those kinds of issues, I don't think, to be honest with you, is going to have an impact on the quality of our teaching. And we should be evaluating people based on their skills and not necessarily on how long they've been here. So some of these are not bad things. I think a lot of it has to do with how it's going to be implemented.
What do you think about the cursive writing requirement? Are we teaching cursive writing in the
No, we don't.
System?
But, you know, with kids today, myself, I use cursive writing for my signature. And
can't read it, maybe.
And, well, it's not bad, actually. But, you know, I don't know of a lot of people that use that. And we have to think about the genesis of it and why it was created. Back when I was in school, because you just couldn't print as fast as you could write in cursive. But then again, there were no computers, and which kids are using now. And to spend a lot of time on going through those cursive writing exercises that I know I had to go through really doesn't make a lot of sense.
So it's an allocation of time decision, right, that you would rather leave to your teachers or to your local administrators. As to not that cursive writing is bad, but it's not as important as
it
something
was
else
at one time.
As
yep.
it is, you know, you Patrick, you've got more rural participation and probably more sort of like me, conservative people who think that kids today ought to be taught everything that I was taught 60 or 70 years ago,
and more. We still teach cursive and writing and instruction, and we think it's important for students to be able to read cursive writing, whether it's historic documents or whatever. I'm smiling at Principal Maddox here, who I'm very proud of her. She used to be an assistant principal with me in Durham.
You trained her?
Well, I will tell you, she has the most beautiful cursive handwriting you can imagine. And I'm sure Tom is seeing, he's smiling. But we do teach that. But going back to your question about some of the legislation coming down the pike, I'm very concerned about legislation which might potentially further reduce the funding available to our schools. For example, up until now, there has not been a virtual charter school established in North Carolina. There are third-party private companies setting up these charter schools across the country. students can enroll, parents can enroll, homeschoolers or others, and that's a legitimate choice for many people. There's a vibrant homeschool community here in Chapel Hill and in Orange County. But to be able to take, they would be able to take money that if they're in our district, that we would have to pay the charter school, the third-party vendor, to do that. That could.
So you're looking at the possible conversion of every homeschool student who now operates under the supervision of his or her parent and without subsidy from the state, that person with the virtual charter school is converted into somebody who takes resources
correct.
Away
currently,
from the system.
Currently, we pay the per pupil appropriation for students who attend charter schools in both of our districts the same way. And if there's a virtual charter established, someone who's not is at home teaching could draw down those funds for whatever purpose needed, mainly going to private entities. And back to what Tom said, there does seem to be a lot of attempt to replicate, from the legislative perspective, replicate the Florida model and of A through F school grading, pay for performance. And I understand the pay for performance. About 70% of the people believe in better pay for better teachers. I do too. It just has to be done right. And as Tom said, to apply a one-size-fits-all model to every school system in North Carolina, we're very blessed in Orange County to have high-performing schools across the county and excellent funding support. And to loop group us into other school systems that may be struggling or having a lot of difficulty in applying the same principles and rules, I don't think is a fair way to do it or a right way to do it.
Well, you brought up I want to return maybe to the things that worry most about what's happening in the state legislature and at the administration as well. But you mentioned charter schools, and there's an ongoing discussion with respect to one charter school here in the Chapel Hill Carrboro area, and that's the Lee Charter School. And where do we stand with that now, Tom Frisella?
That's been disbanded as of right now. They're not pursuing that initiative. It was approved to move forward, but the charter school company, which is a company out of Ohio, I think, a for-profit organization, in my opinion and from what I read, I just think they thought better of spending the money to build a school that would house about 700 kids, and I think the feeling was they weren't going to be able to fill it, and they would need the money to keep that school running.
From the standpoint of developing a model to serve the population that they wanted to serve, they would have to compete with your system to do a better job, and you felt, or they began to feel.
Yeah,
like
and I think to me, I don't think many of the superintendents are against charters per se. In this particular charter, I think their goal was to replicate what we were doing. And obviously, their thinking was they could do it better than we were doing it. Many charters that are successful have a focus, whether it's the arts, science, STEM, they might have a different focus so that people who choose to go to that charter might go there because they want their child in this kind of environment, which is different than the public school. So I think the hard thing for a charter school is try to replicate, and especially in Orange County where we have good schools, I think it's just harder to get that concept off the ground.
Well, it leads us to the stated purpose one of the stated purposes was to deal with the achievement gap, and that this charter school might be able to do that better than the school system could. So you're challenged. I mean, we've been challenged for a long time about that achievement gap. Can you give us a report and also sort of a perspective of what you think we need to do now to continue to work to close that gap?
The Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools, we're in the process of creating a new long-range plan. We have a vision for the future and where we need to go. And one of the major goals that came out of that process was to eliminate the achievement gap. But the focus that we have is an unrelenting focus on instructional improvement.
I'm sorry.
The focus we have is on instructional improvement in all of our schools. And our feeling is if we provide the right kind of instruction, and we've adopted a philosophy centered on a growth mindset, which believes that all students can learn at high levels, that intelligence is not stagnant. And if we all believe that and we have the right kind of instruction, we can make huge gains on the achievement gap. Mm. So it's a little bit of a different approach that we're taking now as a district. I'm happy to say that in the whole charter school discussion. We had a lot of support from the local NAACP in supporting the public schools rather than the charter schools, because their thinking was they'd rather have the achievement gap eliminated in the public schools than to send their children somewhere else to let that happen.
Well, where the rubber meets the road at the Carrboro High School, how's it working there? What kind of success are you having or reducing the achievement gap there?
It remains a challenge at Carrboro High School, as it does in much of the state. But our focus is, as our superintendent said, we have a growth mindset philosophy, and we believe a rising tide lifts all boats. And so the better we are in the classroom for all students to do well, the better it is for every kid that's there, regardless of whether they initially were a part of an achievement gap. So we're really focusing on our instruction and making sure that we're doing the absolute best we can with each child in the classroom.
Well, it's good to hear a principal talking like that. It's time for us to take a break. You're listening to Hour 6 of the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carrboro Community Forum. And we're talking, of course, about education in our community. We'll be right back after this commercial break. This is D.G. Martin.
The Orange County campus of Durham Tech is booming with 70% more course offerings. This is Penny Gluck, Executive Dean of Durham Tech's Orange County campus, here to invite you to find out why your neighbors and their kids are being educated by us in careers for the 21st century. We specialize in healthcare careers, including emergency medical management, computers, the arts, and much more. To see the full catalog, go to durhamtech.edu. I'll look forward to seeing you on campus here in Orange County.
You wouldn't start a new addition to your home without the right tools. And if you're growing your small business, the right tools are essential to success. At the UPS Store, we have a small business growth toolkit that includes posters, flyers, brochures, a large retractable banner, and more. What's in your small business toolkit? Ask about our small business growth toolkit today at the UPS Stores, your go-to source for your to-do list.
The UPS Stores at Meadowmont, Chapel Hill North, and on Fordham Boulevard, next to the Chapel Hill University Inn.
You know, going to the dentist doesn't have to be unpleasant. Here's Dr. Larry Murray from The Happy Tooth.
A lot of people don't enjoy going to the dentist. A lot of people are very anxious. If we can make the experience a little bit more fun and relaxing, that'll make it a better experience for the patient and dispel some of their anxieties. So our philosophy is have a good time, bond with your patients, and make your patients feel they're part of the family and they'll look forward to coming back.
The Happy Tooth. Google Happy Tooth Chapel Hill to find out more.
Bring the kids, welcome your neighbors, and leave the work week behind. Hi, this is Michelle at the Carolina Inn, inviting you to join us for the first Fridays on the Front Porch of the season on April 26th, starting at 5 p.m. Fridays on the Front Porch provides the perfect atmosphere for kicking back, relaxing, and getting a jump start on the weekend. Enjoy great food, live music, and fun times under the shady oaks and magnolia trees. There's no cover charge and no reservations to attend. For more information, visit carolinainn.com.
It's the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carrboro Orange County Forum. You can also hear all our local conversations streaming live on chapelboro.com. And now back with more of the WCHL Forum.
Well, welcome back to the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carrboro Community Forum. We've been talking a little bit about some of the action at the state level. And during the break, we were passing each other notes in cursive handwriting. and I think the result of that is that although we may have different approaches in the two school system, we don't want the state telling us exactly what to teach. Before we leave it, along with the cursive, the proposal is also to require the teaching of multiplication tables. And who could argue against that?
You know, I think there's always room for some things you just have to know. And whether some things you need to just know automatically. And I think there are times when the skill of memorizing something is not a bad thing. And you know, we are talking a lot in our schools about thinking and problem solving, but some things do need to be automatic. So although that might seem old-fashioned, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yes, Rand. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. Rand Northam, news director here at WCHL. I want to ask, in a follow-up to that, While it's good to know it automatically, we are teaching for the digital age of the computer age, and we're trying to be ready in that sense too. So is it just about finding the happy medium between that? And, you know, this is for any of you, but to know, you know, to allow the time to devote to that and, you know, punching those numbers on the keyboard, though that's not a hard thing to, I guess, you know, versus the memorization of it. But is there a happy medium that you have to find between that as well?
Just quickly, I think there's a lot of mental math that goes on in all of our lives. So whether you're in a grocery store and you're looking at different items and you just know that, you know, this is 40 cents and I get three of those. So that automatic response is just an everyday life kind of thing that you're, you know, to know that 3 times 4 is 12, you don't want to have to punch that into your phone. So I don't think it's a huge issue, because you're right. In this digital age, do you really need to know that? It's more important that you understand the process and how math works. But still, I think there's some value, and maybe that's a bit old-fashioned.
Shel Reinstein, you're the chair of our school board. What are your thoughts?
Just to speak with the digital age, it made me think of another issue that we've touched on with all of this. There are only so many minutes in the day, and instructional time, every bit of it has to be done in an effective way, which is why Dr. Forsella's focus on improving instruction in the classroom, with improve the engagement of all kids and rise all boats, or how you said it much more eloquently than I did, Ms. Maddox, but trying to use every minute of instruction on all aspects. So I do agree with you. We're trying to strike a balance with that, and there are all these different initiatives and fundamental pieces, though, that have to be there. Another one that we've focused on in our district has been literacy instruction, realizing that the achievement gaps that our children are facing only get wider if we don't close that right at the very beginning, when the mind is sort of at its best time to learn to read. And that is, there's a version of that that's come through the state that gets back to your question about these different state initiatives and how, while an intention can be great, how it actually plays out in the classroom and how we manage it is difficult. And that is this requirement that they're making that all children will pass third grade reading. And the idea is great, because there's a lot of evidence that by that time you need to really be reading well in order to continue to learn. We need to realize that some of these initiatives that are made have good intentions, but how we can do them when you only have so many minutes in a day is hard.
Well, thank you, Shel. Patrick Rhodes, superintendent in Orange County Schools.
Yeah, just to comment on what Rand was asking about preparing our students for the digital age, there doesn't have to be a compromise. We are placing a heavy emphasis on that in our district. This year we have laptops for students in grades 6 through 12. They take them all home. We've invested heavily in digital textbooks and resources, and we're seeing some tremendous improvement in just some non-measured areas.
This is a special initiative in Orange County Schools, and people are watching. So everybody's got a laptop?
Every 6th through 12th grader right now, and we plan on expanding that down more in the elementary, not and for take-home, but they take them home, they have them, have backpacks for them and everything. So
it's been, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, no, but initially it's been worth...
Absolutely. We already had low suspension rates and good attendance, but our suspension rates are down, our in-school suspensions are down, our referrals are down, and we think it's because students come in, they have their lessons already queued up, and they start working on them, whether they're using Google collaboration tools or Moodle courses that our teachers have set up. We have had a reduction also in our reportable offenses and have had zero long-term suspensions this year. And so that in itself has been a positive injection into the school. And we've had students say and make testimony of how much they think this is going to help them as they move forward, particularly into college, where there's a lot more online instruction, a lot more of this collaborative nature. That's just a little bit.
Well, I want to, this is risky, but I'm going to ask Laverne Maddox, you're watching this. Are you asking your board chair and your superintendent for this sort of resource?
Not just yet, but we are watching, and we are aware. We're blessed to be in a district where that type of resource is plentiful for our students. Every student, if needed, would have access to that type of technology at least during the school day, and so we're interested in seeing how we can prepare students for the digital age that they're living in. And we, though we don't have laptops for each student, we're blessed at Carborough High School that we have several other technological tools that our students use. We have Nooks, we have other e-readers, we have plentiful calculators and things that we're able to use as instructional tools with our students. Just to respond, if I could, yes, take a moment to respond to Rand's question as well. You know, it was very thought-provoking for me. We do want to find the medium, but one thing that we talk about, if you have a growth mindset, is that you know part of learning the multiplication tables is to give students a sense of the number. Oftentimes when students get to me and they're struggling in mathematics, when we have the specialist talk to us about it, it is because you could probably trace it back to second and third grade where they never really got the sense of the number and how different pieces of things fit together. So there is a place for that, and having students struggle with that. With a growth mindset, we think that there is some value in a student struggling with those types of activities on their own without the use of technology. So there is a balance.
Patrick Rhodes again.
Yeah, I just want to say that it's really not about the computer, but the potential to change the instructional program. And we've had many teachers who are veterans who have never had a classroom full of students before with these devices who can say, now for the first time, Johnny already gets it. I can move him along. Susie doesn't get it, I can give him the extra drill and practice, whether it's Khan Academy, ILS Math, or whatever it is that we use, and extend that time beyond the classroom. And that's the greatest potential there. And it has been a tremendous equalizer for us between the haves and the have-nots.
Well,
because the haves clearly have had this at home.
Thanks for that example. And Tom, I'm sure you're looking at that and evaluating it. Casey, you had a comment.
I did. I just wanted to follow up on what Shell was saying about early literacy and outcomes for students down the road. One of the things that's really exciting through this redistricting and what happened last year with the system-wide dialogue about dual language and having the new magnet school in Spanish and continuing the dual language Mandarin program at Glenwood and all of the wonderful benefits to the students that getting that second language acquisition at a young age. I'm not an educator, but the academic success of those students is measurable when they get that language at a young age. Bringing it into middle school and high school isn't the same.
I want to move, I endorse that, Casey, and I think
it's okay.
It's probably a question as to whether or not the language pays the second language pays off in some other way other than just being a citizen of the world, but that's good to hear. I want y'all to help me. Many of us, and maybe some of those who are listening, we're interested in our schools, but we're also interested in our children and grandchildren. And you all of you are in touch with children and their needs in ways that the rest of us aren't. And so starting with you, Laverne Maddox, as a principal of Carborough High School, what if you had a minute or two to talk to each of us, not so much about the policies, but about the kids that you're dealing with, what is it that we might want and need to know about them, both upsides and downsides? Talk to us about them.
Well, I will approach it as a principal, but I'm also a parent as well. I'm a mother, so I have very definite opinions on that. But, I think that if I only had 1 minute or 2 minutes to talk to the community, I would say I can't express the value and the benefit of nothing more than your time. Your time. If someone always asks me, what is the number one resource that if I could give you any gift, what would you want? It would be time. Time to listen to your children. Time to really sit with them and find out what is going on. They are growing up in an extremely volatile world, and the challenges for them are great. And often I find that The things that they most need and most ask of the educators in our building, even more than the help with their academics, is please help me deal with life and how to persist when things get difficult and how to understand no sometimes is an opportunity and how to just build a sense of myself. So I would say time is the most valuable thing that parents can do. Spend some time with your children, talk to them, and be involved. Take a minute.
That's great. I'm going to ask Patrick Rhodes to talk a little bit about, from your perspective, what do you see about kids in school these days that those of us who were in school a long time ago might need to know in order to understand what's happening?
This is a universal, but all students need to feel safe and secure and cared for. And I don't think children or high schoolers care anything about what you know or what you have to say unless they know you first care about them. And we're very fortunate in this county as a whole, I'm talking about the whole county, to have many committed teachers and professionals who care deeply about the students they come in contact with every day and care about their safety and their security. And it is a very tumultuous world in many ways out there. And you only need to look at the news to see that. And we need to be a safe haven, a place of security and a community in each of our schools that makes students feel like they're insulated from that, can be protected, can learn, grow, play, and develop. And that's really important.
Shel Brownstein.
Also a parent as well. they just are growing up really fast. The challenges that I've seen my children face, and then part of being on a board, you are privy to individual situations for families and students that we end up having to, as a board, make decisions about. And the breadth of what I've seen in my time on the board is just reiterated for what I already knew as a mother. Our children are facing things at a much younger age. The intensity by which they are having to grow up and the pressures that they feel are significant. And so it makes perfect sense to me that the wisdom of Ms. Maddox and Patrick Rhodes is that the time and also the sense of caring, I would echo.
Tom Frisella, superintendent of the Chapel of Carver Schools, you have wisdom to add?
I think what's been said is it hits right on the mark. And when you think about it, when you ask that question, the answers you're getting are about kids, about relationships, and it's not that you have to get to the highest level of calculus. What we want is kids to be able to be kids and to grow up, as Patrick said, safe, and as everyone else has said, people in working with people who care about them.
Feel good about our kids as you see them from the superintendents? Or, there's a lot, we worry and
we have great kids. I mean, I walk through our schools. The one thing that we have are we have really great children and obviously great parents who care about them also. If I had a concern, it is that there are very, very high expectations on all of our kids, and we need to make sure that we're allowing them the opportunity to enjoy their childhood.
Mm. What great advice. Casey, you're a parent. You're watching this. What have you learned that you could share with us?
Well, first, I just want to say thank you for all of those comments. As a parent in the district and in the system, thank you. Those were really nice, thoughtful responses. Because one of the things, when you asked us to prepare, one of my concerns is that I am raising my children in a pressure cooker. And how do you have them be just kids? How do you let them be outside long enough to have the imagination and the curiosity and the creativity that they're going to need to be good, well-adjusted adults one day, in addition to being really smart and academically advanced?
Well, what a way to end a great conversation, and I want to thank each of you, Tom Frisella, Patrick Rhodes, Shel Brownstein, Laverne Maddox, and Casey Saucy. What a great privilege for me to have this time with you, and I'm sure that those who are listening would also wish that I would express our appreciation to you all, not just for being with us today, but for what you do every day. Thank you again. Well, this concludes our sixth of the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carborough Community Forum. This hour, as well as the entire day's broadcast, can be found on our website, chapelborough.com.